Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we dedicate the hour to social justice activism. Particularly, we'll be looking at local to global and back again type movements, particularly youth activism. But we'll also be looking at new ways and creative ways that people have been working together around the world to, well, right the world and make it a more just and equitable place. These are also issues that are not usually covered by the corporate media, and therefore, for the hour today, we will address these issues on the Project Censored Show. Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. In this segment of the program, we're going to be focusing on not just activism, but particularly local to global activism. And this is a segment that was sparked by the recent Women's March. Those of you that have been listening to the program for a while know that the program Project Censored Show originated in Berkeley, California in 2010 with Peter Phillips and myself. And for about the last year, I've been doing some of the recordings for the program up in Petaluma, where I live. And in Petaluma this past month, they held the first Women's March, and it was an absolutely incredible showing for a town the size of Petaluma, about 60,000 in Northern California, about 45 minutes north of San Francisco. And I have in studio today one of the participants who is also a fantastic young activist. Lucia Garay is with us in studio. She is a junior at Casa Grande High School. She is also chair of the Sonoma County Junior Commission on Human Rights. She has spoken at the March for Our Lives as well as the Women's March here. And I welcome Lucia to the Project Censored Show to share her experiences and her thoughts with us today. Lucia, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start here. You're a junior in high school. When did you really start to get tuned in to social justice issues and activism?
I would say in 7th and 8th grade, I really started paying attention to the news. And once you're paying attention, it's hard not to be angry about everything that's going on.
The adage, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention,
yeah.
Right? You've been involved, you're interested in current events. How did you get more involved being a junior in high school and you're the chair of the Sonoma County Junior Commission on Human Rights? That's a pretty big deal. How did that come about?
Freshman year, I applied to be a member of the Sonoma County Junior Commission on Human Rights. Sophomore year, I became a full-fledged member, and I helped with a project in the racial injustice and inequality ad hoc of the commission. And from there, I ran for chair for this year, and I've been working with all of the groups to make a more like synchronized project between all of us.
So how long have you been on the commission?
2 years now.
Tell our listeners, what do you do? What does the commission do and what do you do?
The commission is a group of student activists who see issues usually with their local communities and they want to take action. So the commission gives them a space and the resources to do that. Our mentor, Demetra Smith, gives us all the resources and support that we need to address the issues that we choose. So we have a mental health ad hoc, a racial injustice and inequality ad hoc, immigrants' rights ad hoc. There's also the Commission on the Status of Women that we're involved with, and we just address any issues that we as youth think are affecting us and take up projects around them.
What then is the connection, if any, between your involvement in this commission and, say, what you do at your school? Is there overlap, or is this completely extracurricular?
It's mostly extracurricular, mm-hmm. But I like to bring as much of my work from the commission into my school as possible, since that's where I see a lot of the issues that drive me to be on the commission. So when I was part of the racial injustice and inequality ad hoc, I would bring the survey to my school. And then after that, I brought the info from the survey and presented it to the school board or to the local administration. And I also do a lot of work with the paper at our school, the Gaucho Gazette. So I take a lot of the information that I learned from the commission and work that into my reporting.
We were talking a little bit before the program began, and you mentioned even that you all worked some with the local newspaper, the Argus Courier.
Yeah, we have the choice of writing stories for the Argus Courier, and we actually get paid, which is a big plus. I'm currently writing a story about the unfair dress codes at the Petaluma City Schools and how they're unfairly slanted towards female students.
Tell us a little bit more about that. That's certainly not something that's only happening in the Petaluma schools, right? Mm-hmm. In other communities, even in the Bay Area. What's your experience with that?
Any girl in high school has at least one story of wearing a tank top or shorts that are too short or a skirt and being told by administration that they needed to cover up. And usually the reason is that we're distracting the male students from their education. So I and others can tell you that it's really backwards to tell a girl that she's being distracting and then take away from her education to suspend her or to make her change her clothing or just to humiliate her in front of her peers.
And so what kind of headway have you made on that in your school? I mean, has it been a big issue there?
It's been a little bit of an issue, especially in the junior high. I thought it'd be more of an issue at the high school, but in fact, at the junior high, they have really strict policies. And if you don't comply with these policies, they give you a big neon shirt that says school is cool. And at first, you know, it seems like it would be a funny joke, but it's basically highlighting the students that the administration sees as slutty or not wearing something appropriate. So as soon as I became more aware of that, I started to speak about it. Then I went to high school, and there's a similar type of problem where administration will mention to girls, just mention to them, like, oh, maybe you shouldn't wear that next time, or maybe you should put on a sweater to cover up your shoulders. But the same is not applied to boys.
Luthea Garay, let's flip this a minute. Let's pretend you're not in high school. How appropriate or inappropriate would it be for someone on the street to come up to you and make the same kind of statement?
Well, that just goes into catcalling that a lot of people have experienced. Nobody has the right to tell me what to wear or what I should or shouldn't be wearing, and nothing I wear can dictate how I should be treated by a stranger on the street.
Do you write about this at all in the school newspaper?
I'm working on the article currently, but in the school newspaper, there have been some articles. Recently, we focused more on the lack of Title IX resources at schools. Title IX is the article that states that there's not allowed to be discrimination on the basis of gender or sexual orientation. And surprisingly, there is little to no information about that at the Petaluma City Schools. In fact, last year, the valedictorian of the Petaluma High School, Lulabelle Seitz, she was speaking about her experience with sexual harassment and assault, and the administration cut her mic. So that inspired me to write this story about Title IX for my school newspaper and try to encourage the administration to put more information out there so that students knew what their rights are and they knew what to do if those rights were ever violated.
That's such an important story. And I'm glad you brought up Lulabelle. That actually made national news, the censorship of the valedictorian, who was basically decrying the treatment she had at the school. Can you tell us a bit of that story for listeners that don't know or recall? Do you feel comfortable telling
a little bit?
Okay.
I can't speak for Lulabelle, but I have had some conversations with her. I interviewed her for the article that I wrote. She basically experienced some sort of sexual harassment, and when she tried to report to the school, she was either told, we'll take care of it, but no real consequence was put forth for the male student who had done this to her, and they also told her just to hush about it. So when Lulabelle, who's an amazing student, became valedictorian, she tried to use that platform to speak to her peers about something that's inevitably an experience for lots of the girls at the school. And it goes in to show that maybe the administration wanted to help Lulabelle, but they decided that this platform wasn't a good place, which just violates her First Amendment rights, to be sure, but the rights of all the other students there by saying that they wanted to have a beautiful ceremony rather than use it as a place to speak about their experiences, which is just unacceptable.
I really hope that people are still contacting the Petaluma School District Superintendent about that issue, because it's ongoing, and that made a big splash in terms of attention. But there's things like that going on quite often on different levels or less publicly accessible levels. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, I do less work with gender equality, but more with like racial equality in this Petaluma City Schools. And that's even less spoken about, especially in Sonoma County, because a lot of the times students of color don't have the platform and the support and the visibility that they need to bring attention to the issues that they're facing. And the administration usually just doesn't want to deal with their suffering.
And there's all kinds of other fallout from the administrative perspective, right? That shouldn't come into play when it comes to serving and helping students, but unfortunately we know that it does. I'd like to remind listeners that this is the Project Censored Show, and I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today in this segment, we're speaking with Luthea Garay, and we're talking about youth activism in this case, but activism just in general. Luthea was a recent participant in the Women's March and a speaker at the major rally here in Sonoma County in Petaluma. Of course, those rallies and marches were held all across the United States. There was a massive outpouring of people trying to call attention to various forms of injustices and calling for more social justice, more inclusiveness, more tolerance. I wanted to back up a minute because when you were talking about your work in the paper and then you mentioned Lulabelle, the valedictorian who was censored, I wanted to go a little bit deeper on that just because that's clearly an issue of censorship. And I'm curious on a number of other levels. One, the content of the speech, which was online and on YouTube and so forth, there was nothing in it that was offensive or that was out of line or even violated school policy per se. Is that correct?
If you listen to the speech on YouTube, she doesn't really mention anything directly. She just says generally that this is experience that she and a lot of other students have this, at the school have had. But for some reason, the administration saw fit to take away her right to speak about her experience.
We've already mentioned that that's problematic. But on top of that, the administration is robbing the audience of the opportunity to share that experience, to understand that this is a thing and it's an experience that so many other people out there might even resonate with, and it's happening to them and they're not saying anything.
I think for a lot of people in power, they always say, you know, there's a time and there's a place.
For them, it's never and nowhere.
Yeah, they always say there's a time and a place and we'll listen to you when the time is right. But for young women, for girls, for victims of sexual assault, I mean, it's happening all the time, everywhere, and there's no escape. So, of course, we're going to try to speak about it.
And in an era of hashtag activism, fourth wave feminism, hashtag Me Too, hashtag Time's Up, this is a classic example of someone saying, we can't suppress these kinds of stories anymore. So, again, the interesting thing is that this is also someone that became valedictorian, and despite her experiences and negative things that happened, she still thrived and became successful. Yeah. So, at least from my perspective, when I learned about that story in that case and looked more deeply into it, I was actually surprised because it would seem to me that this person is the perfect example of someone who stands in the face of adversity and rises above it to share that lesson with others in hopes that others don't have to experience and then move on to better things. So, how did you interpret that speech?
If you look at the video of her when she's actually trying to give the speech and she gets cut off, you can tell the moment that she's cut off, she's in disbelief. She can't believe that they would do something like this to her, and she's furious. Of course, anyone would be. But I think you have to take a step and like put yourself in Lulabelle Seitz's shoes and try to imagine what she's experienced, that she's worked so hard throughout her entire high school career. And she was discriminated against because of her gender. She experienced sexual harassment. And she still persevered, but in that moment that was supposed to be her moment when she had a chance to share her experience, they took that from her. So there's something deeply violating about what the administration did to her because of how hard she worked and what she went through and the fact that it took her voice away.
You say that you're working currently on a piece that relates to this at all, or you've written about it previously?
I'm writing a piece about the dress code, which doesn't have to do with it directly, but it definitely has a lot to do with like perceptions of sexuality and gender in schools. You know, the thing that you hear administration saying the most is that dressing a certain way will distract other students, and it just goes into like the deeper rape culture that is suffocating America.
And particularly some of the inverse elements of that, the culture of toxic masculinity and permissiveness. And as the president of the United States, Donald Trump, even said when he was caught engaging in this kind of extraordinarily misogynistic and lewd behavior, he laughed it off as, quote, locker room talk. Do you hear peers at school sort of maybe mimicking that or other people sort of using that as justification for maybe that kind of behavior?
A lot of the boys, they don't realize some of the things they say have a deeper effect because, you know, they've never been in the position where they feel vulnerable. But I definitely remember, and every other girl I know remembers walking down the street, minding your own business, when like an adult man sexualizes you in a way that feels like so violating. So it just goes into like when you hear a boy at school doing that, a peer that you're supposed to be able to trust and respect and confide in, it's hard to trust them. It's hard to be able to communicate with them without getting angry.
And it seems, too, that you're not saying it quite, but it seems that it's a learned behavior. It's not a boys will be boys mm-hmm. kind of excuse. It's they're seeing it somewhere.
I don't think any boy grows up with, like, those ideas that he can do this. And a lot of times I hear, like, when people talk about catcalls, they say, like, oh, it's a compliment, don't take it so seriously, or he's just joking. But the fact that a boy or a man thinks that he has the right to speak to anyone like that in public or in private, it just goes into, like, catcalling becomes sexual harassment, which becomes sexual assault, which becomes an entire culture of keeping this quiet or normalizing it.
We're speaking with Luthea Garay, who is a junior in high school here in Northern California, also an activist, a student journalist. She is also chair of the Sonoma County Junior Commission on Human Rights. You're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. We'll continue our conversation after this brief musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. In this segment, we're speaking with youth activist Luthea Garay. She is a high school student in Northern California in Sonoma County. She's also the chair of the Sonoma County Junior Commission on Human Rights. And she was a participant in the recent Women's March here in Sonoma County and was one of the speakers. Also, these rallies and these events took place all across the country. Earlier in our conversation, Luthea, you were talking about Title IX. You were talking about your work on journalism at the student paper. You even mentioned about getting paid to write for the local paper. And my reaction to that might have been somewhat amusing, but that's a stellar thing, right? Because we live in a culture where journalism that speaks truth to power doesn't always pay, right? And you've been able to work into that. And the folks at the local paper, certainly Matt Brown and others at the Argus Courier, that's fantastic that they're giving you these kind of opportunities to develop that. So I'm curious, have you experienced censorship in the high school newspaper or junior high paper?
I would say not like a directly recognizable censorship happens at my school a lot. What I've noticed more is like sneaky censorship where administration will allow us to print whatever we want, but then it almost becomes like it's trivialized because students are printing it, which is why it's hard to be a student journalist because it's not taken as seriously or your peers will make jokes about it because they hear adults making jokes about it, or it's just not as widespread, so it's easier to disregard.
That's pretty interesting that you're noting that. So it's something that is happening, yet it's not an overt thing. Mm-hmm. It's almost sort of like a leaving it go and it just disappears, right? Or there's not a heavy hand, per se.
Yeah.
It's good to hear that there isn't a heavy hand, because certainly in some junior and high schools, there's definite censorship, right? And that can be a real serious problem. So another one of the things, you mentioned Title IX before, what are your experiences in the school environment regarding LGBTQ issues?
I myself am not a member of the LGBTQ community, but I have tried to be pretty active when it comes to that regard. I'm not sure if you're aware of the new FAIR Act that's been passed in California, but it's a bill that's meant to make it a legal requirement for schools to incorporate LGBTQ history into their English and history classes. And it just hasn't been implemented at all at our school in the 2 years since the bill was passed.
2 years.
Yes, two
it's
years.
It's been 2 years and you're not seeing evidence of it.
No. I know for a fact that in the junior history books, there's exactly one page of gay and lesbian history, which doesn't reflect the truth of the matter at all. So I have friends who are in the community, and that's the only way I get any information about any of this. So I can only imagine what it's like to be an LGBTQ youth who's in the closet or just coming out of the closet and has no idea how to identify him or herself, or has no idea about the history of this community that I'm entering. And I can't believe that the schools aren't doing more to incorporate these truths into our curriculum, not just for students who are LGBTQ plus, but for any other student, because education is the first step towards becoming more inclusive and accepting of all of our peers.
So I'm curious, in Petaluma, there's been a change in the school board. There's been some really welcome changes, both in terms of people of color, people that identify as LGBTQ, people that have a background in education and counseling, the kind of people that you'd think would be on the school board,
yeah.
right? Not just business people, lawyers and insurance and real estate people, right, is how it's been. The
yeah.
former superintendent was an accountant. I mean, that's great. We need accountants, but not running school districts.
Mm-hmm.
The current superintendent, Gary Callahan, have you had any experience with the school board or the previous school board or superintendent about the FAIR Act?
I have not, but I will say that Joanna Pond, Kaylin Quinn, and Maddie Cloud all mm-hmm. spoke at the Petaluma Women's March, and I and some of my peers and Kaylin Quinn have all been in contact about pressing for more FAIR Act education in our school system.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a meeting coming up open to the community about having more FAIR Act education in our schools because it really is so necessary.
So the FAIR Act is a state law. It's been around, you said, 2 years.
2 years.
So is this like a slow rollout?
I really think that nobody really wants to bother with rewriting the curriculum, getting new books, re-educating teachers. It's a laziness thing, really. That's what it comes down to. Nobody wants to have to go through all of this. We like to think that we're pretty liberal in California, especially in the area that we're in. But, you know, it just goes to show you that if there's work involved, people don't really want to do it. So that's why, unfortunately, it comes down to youth pushing for our administration to do this for us, because this isn't something that we can do ourselves.
I think it's important that youth does the pushing. I think that many of the teachers are already on your side.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of teachers, I don't think, are afraid of work. I think they have too much work. But you're right to suggest that people also are reticent to change, and it looks like a big shift, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it would really help if you were able to have more teachers and the community pressure through the school board, the administration, perhaps, to come up with concrete implementation plans about this is a very serious thing and here's what we intend to do about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And so what's your experience with some of the teachers you have that you work with? How responsive have they been to so many of the things that you and your peers are doing?
There's definitely a lot of teachers who are really open to being, you know, re-educated or getting new training having to do with the FAIR Act, and not just the FAIR Act, but more about being more racially inclusive or being more aware of the words and their actions that can have, like, you know, tiny microaggressions that might have detrimental effects on marginalized youth. So there are a lot of teachers who are thankfully really open to that, but there are also some who don't want to admit that it's a problem. So again, it just comes back to basically forcing administration and the school board to put this into implementation so we can get funding for, instead of football, we can start getting funding for new uh-huh. books that have more LGBTQ history or training for the teachers that would allow them to become more aware of social justice. We do have some teachers getting training for social justice certification, but I'm pretty sure there's 3 in the entire district who are going through this training currently, and it's just not enough.
One of the key issues that help people mobilize and begin to address these things is simply being aware
mm-hmm.
that they're going on, and also being aware of maybe that the opportunity's there, but few people seem to be taking advantage of that, right? You mentioned social justice issues. The state of California has recently also passed a transfer degree from the community college level to the 4-year university based on social justice. My own college, where I co-chair the history department at Diablo Valley College, has a new program that they've launched. College of Marin is having a program. So these are things that definitely students like yourself coming out, you know, not only if you're, whether you're going to a community college or a 4-year college, if that's a university, there's a lot more offerings. There's a lot more programs like this. And so coming up on the end of the segment here, these movements that you're part of and these youth movements, and you're younger than a millennial?
I think so.
So the millennials are the largest voting bloc, and of course, millennials are the people that are giving us the dreamers, right? There's so much energy and activism coming from that generation. Has it been influential or inspirational to you to see people maybe 5 or 10 years older than you? Do you find it all that you're maybe following in their footsteps, or do you feel like you're blazing your own trail?
When I really started getting interested in youth activism was after the Parkland shootings and the activism of the students there, like the amazing, incredible work that they did really pushed me and a lot of my peers to take action with the March for Our Lives March and that movement. it's unfortunate that students that young had to go through something like that to get the attention of people in power. But at the same time, they really did inspire a lot of other kids to realize that this is our future, not yours. And if we want to change something, you have to change it for us since we're not even old enough to vote yet. So I say that would be the group that's been most inspiring to me since I relate to them. Also, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who has been so inspirational. She really represents everything that we're trying to bring to the table because she's just not having some of the tactics that the Republicans have been trying to use against her.
You'd say she's ruffling all the right feathers.
Yeah, she is. Part of me is just waiting for her to make a slip and someone else is going to call her out on it. There's going to be a huge issue with it. But I think when it comes down to it, there's so many issues. My main issue that I'm most passionate about is environmental activism, other human rights issues around the world. The only way that we're going to be truly equal if we start to, you know, come to the same table and begin honest discussion with ourselves, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or a third party or Black, white, mm-hmm. LGBTQ, heterosexual, cisgender, whatever you identify as, it's time to start having conversations with each other. And we need to focus on our similarities instead of our differences.
Well put. And, you know, Ocasio-Cortez isn't just representing people in New York. She's representing a whole generation of people. And not even just here. She's really, I wouldn't say speaking for, but someone that has this platform now that's been put there that speaks in a language that has just been really foreign to the more white male older leadership that we've seen for generations. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's time for change. Well, Luthea Garay, I have to say that it's been a fantastic segment with you. I really enjoy talking with you, and I'm really interested in hearing more about what you have going on. And I'll make an assumption that you're probably going to be finishing up in the next year or two, and I imagine you're looking into colleges and universities, pursuing any of these areas, environmental activism or social justice or sociology or...
I really think that the right path for me is I'm going to study environmental science first because I don't think enough politicians or lawyers have science backgrounds. So that's what I'll do first. And from there, probably go into law and start fighting for the environment from a law perspective.
And we know that a lot of the pressure that we see now on climate change and climate crisis issues are coming from young people, mm-hmm. the lawsuits, because our older generation's basically robbing you of the planet. So any last words from you on anything you wanted to share about upcoming events or anything else that you want to share with people?
As of right now, you know, there are a lot of projects that are in progress in the works by a lot of different type of people. I'm really glad to see that our Women's March inspired a large amount of people to start speaking out for the issues that they see. So I'm glad everyone's keeping vocal and getting active.
That's wonderful to hear. And Luthea Garay, we're certainly going to be in touch with you. And we hope that you can share not just the great work that you're doing, but also with your peers. And we love to have the voices of young people on the Project Censored show. So you and your peers have an open door and an open seat here. And we hope to have you back on again.
All right. Thank you.
I'm Mickey Huff. You're tuned to the Project Censored show. Up next, we will go more from local to global. And we'll hear from Stephen Jay about Mobilize. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we're talking about activism and the significance of activist-based journalism and social justice journalism. In the first segment of the program, we were talking about local elements of that. And in this segment, we're going from local to global. And of course, that always goes back again. I'd like to welcome back to the program Stephen Jay. Stephen Jay is someone whom I've known for a number of years. He is the founder and creative director of an organization called Mobilized, and you can learn more at mobilized.news. Stephen has consulted numerous organizations and producers of music and motion pictures. He also used to write for several newspapers and magazines. And, of course, Stephen Jay has also worked with us at Project Censored and the Media Freedom Foundation on a few different collaborative projects, including this new one, Mobilized.News. Stephen Jay, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Great to be here.
It's been a little while since you've been on, so tell our listeners what you've been up to and what's Mobilized.
Mobilized is a social action network based on the natural systems, such as if you look at nature, it just works. If you studied the work of Buckminster Fuller, you have an idea what we're talking about, where everything impacts everything. And a lot of media, as we all know, is floundering, and no matter what digital company that comes out with backed by all this venture capital says they're going to change the world with their new idea, we just believe that quality rocks and truth rocks, and it's not about how many eyeballs you can get to sell the latest car or appliance or shiny new anything that people don't really need. But how can a story impact a person's life to take action in a specific subject? So when we look at any of the major mainstream outlets, which I don't want to look at, but majority of people look at, they're not just getting a misinformed story of what's happening in the geopolitical world. They're also getting a misinformed story of humanity in place with nature and the universe without getting into physics or quantum physics. Spend an enormous amount of time with astronauts, people working for NASA, discovering the interconnections between the information we receive, whether it's from a mobile phone, or whether it's from a television or radio, or whether it's from people playing a game of telephone like we used to play as kids, and that something starts out sincerely and it becomes evolved and transformed into something nothing like what it once was. So I asked a simple question. Based on the fact that most of our systems are collapsing, based on the fact that our leaders are failing us, based on the fact that many of our media institutions have failed us and failed to recognize the warnings that were about to happen at the beginning stages of digital disruption, if we wanted to build a new product or service that impacts humanity, what would you build? What would it look like? What would a new media company look like if it was to serve people? And it would mean, quite simply, it couldn't take advertising because then the sponsor would want their say. So how would we make money with it? Well, the goal wasn't to make money. The goal was to inform people. So we had to find other ways of doing things. So we came up with this idea called the Creatrix. Actually, this idea is about 4 years old. And it was to create the next generation United Artists Studios, create projects that the artists and the creators own themselves. I mean, we have the tools where we can create quality video, quality programming for next to nothing. So if we get the egos out of the way, we come together and build stuff together, we can own the stuff together as well. So we wanted to create a facilitator project that could enable creative conscious creative people to unite and create new things and discover more about one another while they overcome misunderstandings. I know it's a long answer.
It's what you've been doing for a number of years. You just said the Creatrix is an idea that's been going on for 4 years. So be more specific about the Creatrix for our listeners and how is it part of Mobilized?
Okay, for example, we're starting with a project called One, and One, and also known as We Are One. And the inspiration came to me in early December of 2015. I had heart surgery open bypass surgery, so a triple bypass. And upon that, when you face a near-death experience, everything changes. Life just changes. And you think, okay, so now that I've got through that and I'm about to have a second life, what do I want to do? Well, I want to build a project that can actually help to heal people. And We Are One, you know, comes off the, not the We Are the World type theme, but you think of what Einstein said about the universe and that we are all part of something called the universe and the delusion that we think we're something separate from everything else. And that the idea of oneness can help people to make better decisions. So I reached out to a friend of mine who's a very cool cinematographer and came to the idea that this idea of oneness in media would make sense. And I started reaching out to several hundred people that I knew. And I said, if I gave you a minute to shoot your own video on your terms with a certain, you know, ratio, we wanted it shot horizontally, and even with a cell phone, would you tell us who you are, what you believe in, what you want in the world, and maybe we can find some commonalities, some similarities, and people can have these epiphanies saying, they want the same thing I want, and why can't we get along? So we're making this film project, and we've got people that are want to be part of it. That's enough for three features. And we're talking about a mobilized film shot on a cell phone to heal the world. Now, is that going to create world peace right away? Absolutely not. But if it could bring people closer together, and if it can help people overcome some misunderstandings and bring some new systems into play, all for it. I'm all for it. And at the same time, there are new innovations that are happening. People, they go to these tech hubs and meetups where they get together and they pitch these ideas for these investors. And that's nice if you want to go that way. But I think so many of the solutions that we're looking for are right in front of our eyes. And all we got to do is open up and see them, and that we can come together and build stuff together. And we wanted to create a platform that would enable that to occur.
So, Stephen J., Mobilize.News, is this something that is still in the beta mode? Is this ready to roll?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely ready. And, you know, there's things that are transpiring that are coming to me and coming to other people about projects that we want to do. And they will be announced as well. Our friend Chuck, who worked at the United Nations Association, Woolery, he's not the game show host, but
right.
He worked for an association of the UN, and he's really, really understands interdependence and how all systems affect everything. And he's been writing a ton of stuff, and he wants to do something on April 7th, which is World Health Day. And he's actually talking about finding a way to fund the sustainable development goals by actually looking at these tax havens where people are hiding their money and finding ways to utilize that. It's a long shot, but every idea sometimes, you know, you never know where it's going to go.
I mean, again, you're working across the spectrum here, too, with a lot of different people, young people, older folks, and not just in the United States, but around the world. And you have this vision, Mobilize, Progress Has a New Home. Really, when one goes to this site, there's so many different things going on. Where would you tell people to dive in? People that are listening that are very interested in the Creatrix, maybe they're interested in the vision or the other projects. What would you tell people to do?
I'm glad you asked that question. When this airs, the page people will get when they just sign on to mobilize.news will be a welcome and an information on what's going on, like a directory and index. So it'll actually outline everything, and then people can sign up, and then once people sign up, they are then invited to either join a project or create a project. So the projects are not just created by myself. It could be created from anyone. A person could say, I've got this great compilation record that I want to do, and here's the terms that we want to sell it for. Let's open it up to the nonprofit world to sell it so that they can make some money as well.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephen Jay, and he is the force behind, actually the founder and creative director of Mobilized. You can learn more at mobilized.news. And again, Stephen, he invests his time and energy in discovering passion of people dedicated to empowering a healthier planet and population in balance with the national world. And you are doing that right now from Southern Florida, and you have worked with a lot of people locally as well. So in terms of local politics and local activism, Mobilized is a global phenomenon. I mean, again, you go to the Mobilized site and you have really fantastic talks with experts from around the world on issues of media or environmental activism and so on. How do you tie this into your own backyard?
I can't. I'm in Florida. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, well, this is why I'm asking the question, and this is partially why you're creating this, is because, you know, maybe people in some places, right, some people maybe don't see it where they are, and they still want this kind of community, and here it is online.
I am in the southern part of Palm Beach County. So I am in an area that is known for the largest drug and rehabilitation population in the entire United States. So the west part of town is mostly retirement villages, and they're very, very nice. You go near the ocean, and you have the halfway houses, and you have boutique art galleries and fashion. But being I'm a New Yorker, I'm used to something at a higher vibe than what I see here. So part of me creates because it's not there, and I want to have something to go to. So I want to create a salon for locals to attend to see a movie or to have a talk that's connected to another talk. You know, many talks all around the country, around the world that are connected to one another. But Florida, it's very difficult to get things done in Florida for many reasons. I think around half the people are retired, and they don't want to do anything. And it's so hot most of the time that people, when they go outside, they just want to go and play or go back inside. So as much as I'd like to say that there's progress here, it's limited. And I could get a scolding for saying that, but I walked away from any sort of progressive political action here in Florida because I just didn't feel that there was vision.
Well, our program airs all across the U.S., and of course, folks naturally that listen to this show and follow politics, Florida does ring some bells for people for various reasons going back decades, and you're there sort of on the front line of that. And you are also the creative director then behind Mobilized.news. I'd like to remind listeners, you're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff. We're talking to Stephen Jay. After this brief musical break, we'll come back and we'll hear more about this creative effort merging all different forms of activism and creating a platform for people to participate and create new ways to change the world. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. In this segment of the program, we are talking with the creative force behind Mobilize.news. That's Mobilize.news. Stephen Jay is our guest. He is the passionate creative force and creative alchemist who spent his life seeking solutions for human potential based on the natural world. He is the force behind the Creatrix and Mobilize.news. Stephen Jay, before the break, we were learning more about what's happening with these movements. And of course, you like to call it a movement of movements. So tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that. And then, of course, also one of the issues that you address is the challenge that many people face in trying to come up with ways to finance or fund or propel their vision of how to change the world.
You know, we all get these newsletters, and some of us send them out, you know, come to this book signing, come to this event, here's a conference, buy a ticket, here's sponsorships. And the progressive movements are all fighting for the same dollar, whether it's social justice or economic justice or environmental justice or human rights, health advocacy, they're all intertwined. So when you think of that and you look at online, what can a person do? What could be created that's very different? Well, I wanted to create an open system, an open network where a person can come in from an organization and learn from a person in a similar organization from a different sector. So say a person working in health or cancer research. They can now find a way of having a better understanding of what's working in another sector. So what's working in the environmental sector? The reality is certain words are buzzing, certain things are not working. So how can people learn from one another? Because when the web was created, it was created to help people overcome misunderstandings and work better together. And it's turned into a giant television and shopping mall full of misinformation and lies. You know, people who are commenting that really don't know anything about what they're talking about or special interest groups. So you think of a chamber of commerce and you say, how can you virtualize it, make it really holistic, and create something that's going to be there for the long run? And that's one aspect of what we're wanting to do. And actually doing. The other is lifelong learning for sustainable development. I wish someone could come up with a better word than sustainable development, because sustainable is an important word, but it doesn't have that magic, you know, that the space program has, for example. But people are learning. I'm taking a big risk in saying this because I know you guys are educators as well, and you're educating people, and probably one of the most important issues now is critical media literacy. But to say, in addition to that, a lot of professors in different sectors at a lot of universities are teaching a flawed view of humanity and the world in existence with everything else. So they go to school, they get a degree, and then they don't know how to market themselves. They don't know how their sector fits in with everything else. And so they wind up failing to get jobs. So we wanted to create conversations for people who are wanting to learn about multi-sector education and bring them together in a cohesive way every week, leading up to every day where, say, someone in Tanzania can find out from someone in Uganda who's finding out from someone in the Philippines how to better approach what they're doing, because our society cannot survive it when it's in a constant state of ignorance. And people, many people, don't have a clue to how their actions impact everything else.
You're talking about the connectivity, right?
Yeah, connectivity, interdependence. They don't realize that they're part of a system, and that a system works when it's synergized with a structure and ethical principles. And if any one of those three are out of whack, the whole system fails. You could have a system for education with a great structure, but the ethical principles are lacking. So therefore, it doesn't teach.
How do you see Mobilize.News and the Creatrix? And so what is the antidote to some of this kind of malaise and this lack of connecting the dots that you're describing here?
By connecting them, actually doing the connecting, spending every single day talking to people. I spoke with a person 2 days ago and did a great interview, a mother and daughter team from Toronto. And they made a wonderful movie, and it'll be on the front page of Mobilize when this airs. And this 16-year-old girl, she's now 19, went around the world and interviewed people about their lives and misunderstandings. Thailand, several countries in Africa and India. And to hear that a girl at 16 years old is this inspired and got her mother's permission to do this and found a way to get the funds to do it and made it, and she never made a film before, that's inspiring. She was so determined that she was going to do it that she found the way to do it.
How do you see if you facilitating this then again? I mean, through the Mobilize site, how can people get there and do these kinds of things?
We start with several projects that are already in motion, and we ask people to join them. And we ask and invite the various nonprofits and NGOs of the world to submit stories about what they're doing and to help build and attract more interest in what they're doing. Fortunately, I'm a pretty good creative alchemist. If I don't know someone and I want to, I find a way to do that. You know, for example, recently there was this young woman who became like the star of the COP24 UN event, the climate change.
Right. The young woman that spoke there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know her and I still don't, but the people that brought her there have become my friends. It just takes an email or a call saying, hey, I got something you might be interested in. And then selling them on an idea and on helping them to mobilize their ideas. I mean, it's hard to say what's in the mind of a creative person, because anyone that you know or anyone else knows who is a producer or a songwriter or an author, it's like we have a whole idea in our head. We know what we want it to look like. We want to know what it to feel like, to smell like, to taste like. We just don't know all the parts, but we know it's going to be there. It's the same thing like a sculptor. I don't remember who it was who said this. The sculptor knows that underneath all of that marble or granite is a beautiful work of art. And it's their job just to chip away at the slab of marble and just reveal it. You just know it's there.
Stephen, you know, we know when we travel around the country and speak about Project Censored issues and so forth, a lot of the questions that we get always come back to, what can I do? How can I get involved? People often feel very overwhelmed. And again, I find myself saying there's so many ways in which people can get involved and be doing things and no need to reinvent the wheel. But there's also a lot of room for creating new things. And I think Mobilize.news, your website and this project, it kind of merges those worlds. It obviously isn't interested in reinventing wheels. And so you'll go there and you'll see stuff from Project Censored or John Perkins, including about music and art and so on. But then you also have that Creatrix, right? And then you have ways in which people can create new things, mobilize to create new ways of trying to face the challenges that we all see before us in the 21st century. So we're wrapping up on this segment of the program. Give our listeners some ideas. You know, why should they become part of Mobilized and how might they be able to be part of this?
Number one, it wasn't there. Should be. Number two, no corporation is going to do it. You're not going to find this in any bookstore. You're not going to find this in any television show. No one's going to do this, because the bottom line is we want creative control to go to the artists. And I'm not saying just do a video and put it in YouTube, get some eyeballs, and buy a soda with the money you receive. We're saying actually create a whole new studio, the same way that United Artists was created. There's no trust in the leaders, but people want clean water, clean air, clean energy. So what can they do? Where can we go? Where can they go to get this? And where it's not distorted. So we want to ask the NGOs and the nonprofits that are working in and out the UN systems, as well as others, what can people do? Who's working on this stuff? Who's taking the energy from waves of the ocean and turning it into electricity?
And on your website, people can find that information and find groups to work with?
Absolutely, but it can only be done when people contribute stories to it. Look, Wikipedia, whether or not you like it or not, it became one of the biggest websites in the world. It started with an idea for someone to create a better or a new way of accessing information. It started with an idea, and now there's contributors. Some of them very good, some of them not so good. But it started with an idea to do it. And we just invite people, mostly through people that I know people, or through email lists that I've cultivated and curated through various events, and saying, this is what we want to do. Your friends are there. Why not you? And all of a sudden they say, okay, we have this great story. We want to tell you about what's working in Somalia or Pakistan or something. You know, American media, it's unfortunate. The average person doesn't know about another nation unless we're blowing them up. And I'm not trying to say that because I don't like American media. There's plenty of American media I love. You know, I love what you guys are doing. I love what they're doing at National Geographic. I love what they used to do at Bravo. Used to, but that was a Canadian network they took over.
We're running out of time, so I want you to really give people something to end with a bang on and why they should be part of what's going on with Mobilized.
Because if people don't come together and build the type of world that we want, there's a whole bunch of people out there whose names are in the news every single day. They're going to tell us how to live our lives. We have a chance if we got ourselves together. That's what I call a movement of movements.
And you can learn more at mobilized.news. We've been talking to the creative force and the founder of mobilized.news. Please go to the website. You can learn an awful lot there. And again, many folks in the Project Censored audience may be seasoned activists, but this is for people who maybe don't know where to go or are looking for a place to do things. And it's also a place for people that have already been doing things for many, many years to connect with other people that are doing similar things to build those movements. So Stephen Jay, I want to thank you for your years of effort in building this site, and thank you for taking time to come back on the Project Censored Show.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign.
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by myself and Peter Phillips. I am Mickey Huff, the executive producer and host of the program, along with Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer. Our associate producer is Dennis Murphy. The Project Censored Show airs on roughly 50 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. To learn more about the work, to find any of our previous archived programs, please go to projectcensored.org. We'll see you next time.
Vitualize alibis, disguise another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, far for little poison. The weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. And the ties for the master thief, confine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love of the brothers and our sisters. Lift our brothers.